But welcome in. This is a hell of a way to get started on the very first edition of D'Lo and KC on ESPN 1320. We're dealing with the elements like so many of you are working from home, man. We appreciate you for being with us. I'm Damian Barling. That is Kenny Caraway.
Kenny Caraway in the building. Hey, South Sac, Meadowview, Land Park, Oak Park, Natomas, West Sac, The Heights, Rancho, East Sac, Folsom, Roseville, Elk Grove. Let's go, baby. D-Lo.
Boy, you
KC.
Named all those.
Everybody.
You named all those right
Everybody.
Off the top of your head. What KC is trying to say there, man, is we are live and we are local. And we are here bringing you our brand of radio, and we're so happy that you tuned in. And don't worry, man, no matter where you are, you can listen to us on the radio.com app. You can listen to us anywhere in the country on the radio.com app. Just search ESPN 1320, hit the heart. That'll make us your favorite radio station, and you can listen every single day, Monday through Friday. There is an on-demand feature there, too. So if you miss anything, if you got to break away for a meeting or 2020 style, if you got to break away for the Zoom call, don't worry. You can catch up with the rest of the show on the podcast version over on radio.com. KC, we picked a hell of a day to get started, man. It was a busy weekend in the National Basketball Association. Obviously, we got the playoffs going on right now with Denver and Utah, one of the more anticipated Western Conference round series. We'll talk about that one as the day progresses, as they're just beginning the second half. But lots of changes around the league. The Chicago Bulls made a change at their head coaching position. No real shock there. The New Orleans Pelicans, they're out with Alvin Gentry. We'll talk about all of those, but really the central focus here in our city is Vlade Divac has stepped down as the general manager of the Sacramento Kings, and your partner in crime over on the J Street Vibes podcast, along with Sam Amick, brought us some interesting details regarding the situation with Vlade and Joe Dumars, and about Vivek Ranadive approaching Vlade with a reduced role, and Vlade saying thank you, but no thank you. He has left. Joe Dumars is overseeing things as the president of basketball operations, and or I guess it's the vice president of basketball operations. And Casey, he's overseeing the general manager search. So it wouldn't be an off season if there wasn't some turmoil surrounding the Sacramento Kings.
Oh man, it's a every year occurrence at this point. You know what I'm saying? And I talked to you a little bit when we were on the IG live. And I said that this franchise needs a strong dose of continuity. When I was playing basketball at McClatchy, there was a coach my sophomore year when I played JV, and he used to always talk about, he said just like this too, he said, continuity. You need continuity, right? And we used to always laugh, what are you talking about, continuity? I don't know what you're talking about. But as I've gotten older, yes, continuity is key. And the only thing continuity, is that the word or whatever? The only continuity that the Kings franchise has is a lack
not
of
having
it,
any. Yeah.
Right. You know what I'm saying?
And you know, we go live on Instagram 45 minutes before the show, so everybody can get a peek into what we're going to be doing today. So make sure you follow us. If you want to connect with the show, please do. Twitter and Instagram, both at D'Lo and KC. You connect with the radio station as well at ESPN 1320. Those accounts are going to be very active moving forward, both on Twitter and on Instagram. We encourage you to follow them both and interact with us right there again at D'Lo and KC. We'll be reading your tweets and your Instagram posts all throughout the day. But you know, the continuity that you and your old coach talk about is really the Kings fans regularly dealing with this nonsense and trying to pick up the pieces of what this shattered franchise is. And there are so many people, you know, we hold on to those 8 years of playoff basketball. You know, I'm of the mindset right now, we need to tear this entire thing down.
Yeah.
Vlade's
yeah.
gone, and I think that's a positive. Paige is gone. I think that's a positive. You need to strip the entire front offices. Joe Dumars is going to be your vice president of basketball operations, or he's going to be your general manager or whatever it is. You need to get your general manager in here. You need to kind of go through this process, and you need to start thinking about your head coach. Because there's no Luke Walton is not in the Kings' future. And I'm not of the mindset where you do this whole, oh, we're going to keep him around for a year. We're going to keep him around for a half year. Oh, but he's going to be on a short lease. If you're Joe Dumars and you wind up being the general manager, or you are whoever winds up being the general manager, you can't go in there with this with, oh, we're going to be operating with Luke Walton on a lease. Just strip it now, move on, and start targeting your potential head coaches.
So Damian, you feel like they need to just rip the Band-Aid off right now and not play any charades and get Luke up out of there. Let me ask you this, because that's a valid point. The concern that I have right now is if us as a fan base and us as a city is seeing there's no stability with this franchise, how does that look across the league? What head coach would want to take this job, especially when you have other appealing jobs, when you talk about the Pelicans or you talk about the Bulls coaching jobs and anything that may come after that? What top candidate would want to say, yeah, let me go to Sacramento right now? They seem like they got it all together.
Well,
I don't know.
So the one positive is the new general manager coming in. The new general manager is obviously going to be tied to the head coach. And I think that's kind of a sense of, okay, it's a sense of maybe confidence for that coach. And then the other thing, and I know people get tired of hearing this, but the fact is it's accurate. It's one of 30 jobs, dude. Like, you know, if you're going to be willing to walk away from one of 30 jobs, then, like, you know, go ahead. So be it. And I can understand not wanting to take a job in Sacramento. I can understand not wanting to take an assistant's position in Sacramento. I can understand all of that. But when you're the head coach and you are selected by a general manager who's in his first year, yeah, I'm all for it. And then, you know, there's also the mindset, well, if it goes south, it's okay because, you know, it's the Kings.
Right. Well, the other aspect that we have to talk about when you talk about maybe letting go of Luke Walton is the financial implications of that. And they're going to be playing Vlade, and they're going to be paying the new GM. Mm-hmm. And then you want to pay Luke and the new head coach again in the pandemic where they haven't had anything go on at the Golden 1 Center in, what, 4 or 5 months?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things that we've got to acknowledge there that are difficult. And, you know, we know most Kings fans know. And if you don't, we'll enlighten you here. The Sacramento Kings are one of the teams that have been, you know, all teams in the NBA have been, you know, they're suffering because of this pandemic. The Sacramento Kings, there are teams that just like in, you know, life right now, there are people who are suffering more than others because of what we're dealing with as a nation. And the Sacramento Kings are one of those entities that are really suffering in the NBA because of the pandemic. You and I did a test run, which obviously, based on the beginning of the show, we weren't able to iron out all of the kinks. But we did a little test run on Friday, and we were connecting, and we were just kind of talking, we basically just talked for an hour and pretended it was a radio show. And this was before Vlade had stepped down. Mm-hmm. And you and I were both of the mindset, and we even talked with Jason Jones that day, that, yeah, the Kings aren't going to make any changes. Like, there's not going to be a change at general manager. There's not going to be a change at head coach because of the reasons that you just said. The team is cash-strapped, as most of the NBA is, mm-hmm. and these guys are locked up for another 4 years. Now, a lot of people, their initial reaction when they saw Vlade, quote, stepped down was, oh, how nice of Vlade. Like, the Kings are going to have to pay him for the next 3 years. No, that is very much not the case. He did step down, but his hand was kind of forced, and he's going to get paid his full salary for the next 3 years, which is exactly what would happen if Luke Walton was let out of his deal. But I'm just of the, if you want, I'm of the mindset, and I understand the financial ramifications of it, but I'm of the mindset that if you are going to correct this thing, correct it now.
Yeah. Like,
don't wait. Or, and more specifically, and here's another thing you got to think about. There's three coaching jobs available, Kenny. Two of them, I think, are extremely attractive. One of them, not so much. I don't know how desirable that Chicago Bulls job is.
A lot of people around the NBA circles seem to think that's like a dormant, like, huge destination. You know what I'm saying? And somebody would look at that and be like, let me go and restore Chicago, number three market in the country, and things of that nature. So, well, I think that's the appeal.
Kind of, well, like, it's Chicago. I mean, you can't ignore that. Like, it's Chicago. Plus, they have a new general manager in place, and the last general manager there, who, you know, he, you know, John Paxson was there for a really long time. So you feel like there's some stability there, significantly more stability than you would have here. But the other two jobs that are available are premium NBA jobs right now. There's a job available right now to coach Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Now, some people might look at that as a deterrent, but look at the way Brooklyn has played with 7 replacement players in the bubble. Like, they've shown more heart than teams that were playing with their entire roster.
That's,
you know, you had NBA, you had guys fighting for their NBA lives. You had guys who were fighting for, you know, roster spots with the Brooklyn Nets next year. You had guys who were fighting for, you know, roster spots with whatever team next year. You had 7 replacement players out there, you know, getting it in, and you still have, you know, Kyrie and KD waiting in the wings. You still have Spencer Dinwiddie and DeAndre Jordan. You have a very loaded team that's going to be able to compete in the Eastern Conference next year. So that is an appealing job. Mm-hmm. And then you've got New Orleans, who's got you know, the heir apparent to the throne in Zion Williamson and a pretty good roster of guys.
You got all-star Brandon Ingram.
You got a pretty good group of guys around him. You got a general manager who has a track record, a proven track record. So you have, you know, two really appealing jobs. And if you're the Sacramento Kings, you got to think like, you have to think ahead. Whether you're Joe Dumars or whoever, you have to think, okay, if we part ways with Luke Walton next year, who's going to be our target? And is that target going to be available? If we part ways with Luke Walton right now, could we potentially sign the coach that we see being the head coach for the Sacramento Kings for the foreseeable future? I don't know.
So, and see, that is, you get into what happened over the weekend with Vladdy, once again, stepping down and everything like that. And you bring this into the coaching situation, and I feel like you have to be cerebral. You got to think two steps ahead here. You can't just go on the wing and be like, well, we got a new GM and that's not going to work, so let's just get rid of the coach. No, you got to think ahead. Like you said, there is two, possibly three coaching vacancies that are probably more desirable than what Sacramento has right now. So you're not going to get the top three candidates, more likely than not. So you look at it in a situation where maybe we ride this out with Luke. Maybe Luke turns into the guy. We don't know. But you use that year to evaluate Luke, but also look ahead and say, okay, the following year, these are the guys that could be out there, whether it's assistants or people losing jobs or whatever. And then you try to make your list for the following year. Right now, you're going to go out there, like I said, with your pants down like you did with this general manager situation, and you're not going to have no plan. That was my biggest issue with what happened. No plan.
How many years are we evaluating, though? And here's another thing that we've got to talk about. And I want you to get your thoughts on this. You talked about the Kings and the Bulls. We got to evaluate those two rosters one against the other. And we've got to figure out what this Kings roster looks like next year. Because I'm not sure that it's going to look exactly the same. And the Kings, it absolutely shouldn't. Connect with us on Twitter and on Instagram at D'Lo and KC. It's Damian Barling. It's Kenny Caraway. We are just getting started here on ESPN 1320. So I'm going to tell y'all the most gut-wrenching part of the first 13 minutes of the show. Most of you know how precious that Boys in the Hood woke up quick at about noon is, and Kenny and I were so hyped for the intro, and we know that you heard it, but we didn't hear it. So there's this sort of, oh man, was really looking forward to hearing that woke up quick for the first time along with the Nipsey Hussle in there. But we're up. We're moving. We've got all those working at home issues corrected, man. And we're excited about the day we've got ahead. Unfortunately, we're talking about bad news as it pertains to the Sacramento Kings. And they're not the only team that has bad news. You got thoughts? Connect with us at D'Lo and KC. That's D-L-O-N-K-C on Twitter and Instagram. As I said earlier, we're going to be extremely active on those accounts. And for all of your sporting news, make sure you follow us as well at ESPN 1320. We're going to be your premier home for everything live and local here in the city of Sacramento. And we are your home of the NBA playoffs as well, as we've got the Dallas Mavericks and the Los Angeles Clippers tonight coming up at 6 o'clock following Damon Ratto and Koski. So we'll talk about that. Some major news in the NFL that we've got to get to, but we're still on the NBA right now, KC, and we're talking about changes that the Sacramento Kings are making. And you know, one thing, a change that hasn't been made, but I think you and I are both in agreement that it's coming, is some sort of change involving Buddy Hield and Bogdan Bogdanovic. I thought when the Kings signed Buddy Hield to that significant contract extension, my feeling was, okay, well, it looks like Bogey's going to be gone by the trade deadline. Mm-hmm. And trade deadline came and went. Obviously, the season stopped. We get this restart going again. And I think there's a lot of questions as to, you know, Buddy's doing a lot of things publicly that seem to be like, oh, okay, Buddy's okay with going to the bench and all of this stuff. But I think a lot of people behind the scenes are more like, eh, this first year of his contract, it's not going particularly well.
No, I think they definitely need to trade Buddy Hill. Absolutely. And I like to continue to say when I bring this up that everything isn't Buddy's fault. All right, but there's a number of different things, a number of different reasons why I feel like that's the move to make. Number one, like you mentioned, I'm just not feeling the vibes Buddy brought to the locker room. And it started with his rant about his contract in the preseason. And don't get it twisted here when I even mention these things. Buddy seems like a genuinely good guy. Like he's a good guy. He's not a malcontent or nothing like that. But it's something about the vibes that he brings if he's not getting his way that I'm just not feeling. I'm not feeling it. Number two, I think outside of De'Aaron Fox and Marvin Bagley, that Buddy Hield chip may be your next biggest trade piece where you can possibly get something of value back in return. All right, that's number two. Number three, I don't like that the contract that you have with Buddy Hield absorbs so much of that salary cap for, I don't want to say so little production, because, you know, he's a possible 20-point-per-game scorer. But if he's not making jump shots, you don't have nothing. You don't have nothing coming from Buddy Hield. So I hesitate to say this, Damian, but I almost feel like you got to get rid of that contract at all cost this offseason. At all cost. You got to free up that money.
So what does all cost mean? You're willing to just kind of hand him over?
As long as I'm not taking that type of money back in return, Yeah, okay. I would take some picks. I would take a rotational guy, even if it's like a bad expiring contract. I would do that. But between that contract and the possible bogey contract, you're hamstrung. And you got to look at how you can get better at this roster. And part of it is moving a Buddy Hield, getting off that money, and getting something back in return, even if it's cap relief.
And that's what you really have to look at, too, is the fact that with Buddy and Bogey, you could be looking in the vicinity of $150 to $160 million tied up between those two. But I'm going to do something I've never done, ever. I'm going to play the advocate for Buddy Hield in this situation for a minute.
Okay.
So play along with me here. What if, because I look at Buddy Hield sometimes, and I don't know, I think someone significantly closer to the franchise and maybe someone significantly closer to the coaching staff would be able to answer this more adequately. What if you were able to get Buddy to buy into a different game plan? What if you were able to get Buddy to buy into, hey, like, Buddy, look, I know you want to be James Harden. I know your hero is Kobe Bryant, man. That's not you, bro. We're going to put you in a position to succeed. You want the ball? You want touches? You want points? You want stats? We're going to put you in a position to get those touches, to get those points, and to get those stats. We're going to, and I know some Kings fans might not actually know what this means, given the things that we've seen over the last year. We're going to run plays for you. You're going to see ball movement. You're going to see player movement. And we're going to put you in a position to where, you know how you shined at the NBA three-point contest and you got everybody's attention? We're going to put you in a position to be able to do that in a game when you are a 20-plus point game per score, whether you're coming off the bench, whether you're starting, whether you're in some role that we're inventing along the way. We are going to put you in a position to succeed. And I wonder, has Luke Walton put Buddy Hield in the best position to succeed? My argument would be, no, he has not. My argument would be, when we saw the Sacramento Kings, the one thing that really stood out in that game against the New Orleans Pelicans, the first one where they were, I mean, what was it, 49 points in the first quarter?
Mm-hmm.
That game, what stood out? Movement. Players were moving. We had a stat over at ESPN 1320 following that game that, like, Buddy and I don't remember if it was Buddy and De'Aaron, but it was definitely Buddy, and Buddy regularly rates very high in the stat, that he ran like 2.5 miles during the game. Mm. You know, there was movement. And what did you get with the movement? You got made baskets, you got open looks, and you got 49 points in the first quarter, and you got, what was it, 130-something points that game, maybe 140-something points that game. I think if you're able to get a coach who puts Buddy in a better position to succeed, then he winds up being a better payout for that $90 million.
I'll come back at you with this one. I feel like Luke did do that. The second he told him, you're coming off the bench and we're starting Bogdan Bogdanovic. Buddy Hield, in that 20-game stretch or however long it was he was coming off the bench, played his best basketball of the season at that time. Like, he was cooking off the bench. He was doing a great job coming in, being that Lou Williams type of guy, right? But he still, this is what I talk about. Now we get into the feelings, right? There was still a vibe around Buddy that he wasn't happy with what was going on, that he was upset that he was coming off the bench, that he still held this grudge, that he felt that everything was being placed on him, when it just was a situation where you just talked about, I feel like Luke put him in a better situation and, more importantly, put the team in a better situation to succeed. And I don't know if you can get Buddy to buy into that, to be honest with you. I would love for Buddy to be like, you know what? I'm going to be Bobby Jackson. I'm going to be Lou Williams. I'm going to win the Sixth Man of the Year. But I think he still thinks he should be the best or the second best player on the team. And he don't defend well enough. He doesn't get to the cup well enough for all of that. I don't see it. And I like his game. I like what he's able to do for as a shooter. But there's more than that's needed from him.
So I think every player thinks that. I think every player thinks that they should be in a certain position and they should be doing certain things. Now, other players buy into their role more. Even though they may think those things, they'll still buy into their role for the betterment of the team. And, you know, ultimately for the many, you know, Manu Ginobili is obviously going to be one of the greatest examples of this. And now, you know, Lou Williams as well is, you know, I'll have individual success buying into the role and the success of the team. But I think you used the word right there, which ultimately could be the nail in the coffin of Buddy Hield, particularly with, again, I'm going to keep operating under the assumption that whether it's this year and it doesn't appear that it's going to be over the, or it's next year, I think we're going to see a new head coach on the sidelines for the Sacramento Kings. But you said defend. He doesn't defend well enough. And he's constantly and again, this is not exclusive to Buddy Hield. The Sacramento Kings are a disaster on the defensive end. And again, Luke Walton was preaching defense all year. You go back to the beginning of the year, man, when the Kings, when everybody was looking, hey, where's the pace? Where's the pace? We were the fastest team in the league last year. Like Greg Popovich was talking about us. Everybody was talking about us. Dwayne Wade was talking about us. Where did all that go? Eric Spoelstra was singing our praises. Like, where did that team go? Luke Walton was talking about, well, here's my plan. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to teach the team to play defense. And when we play defense, you know what we can do? Because we're not taking the ball out of the bucket, we can run. And the better defense we play, the more we can run. And he's absolutely right. Because you know who did it? Over the course of the last 10 games, but the eight everybody's been paying attention to is Monty Williams. The Phoenix Suns, you look at the amount of points that the Phoenix Suns scored. They were scoring 130, they were scoring 120, they were scoring 115. They were putting up big numbers on the offensive end every time that they were playing. But when you dig a little bit deeper and you realize, oh, wait a minute, this team is 8-0, not just because of the amount of points that they were putting up per game. They're 8-0 because their defensive efficiency was number two in the league during this bubble restart. Like, number two. It's like, yo, this is the Phoenix Suns, and that's Monty Williams' M.O. And so everything that Luke Walton wanted to do but wasn't able to accomplish is what we saw the Phoenix Suns ultimately do when this restart happened.
And you know the quote in the moment that stays with me, and this is and once again, there's a lot of things that I like about Buddy Hield's game. I mean, dead-eye shooter, a historical shooter at this point with some of the things he's been able to do in his first four seasons in the league, four or five, whatever the case may be, seasons in the league. I get that. But in the middle of the season, I think it was after the Minnesota game that they lost in overtime or whatever, when Bagley had gotten hurt, Fox had gotten hurt or something like that, and they asked Buddy about the defensive effort and if he can improve on the defensive end. And the first thing that came out of his mouth was, well, nobody else is stopping anybody.
Yeah.
I don't need that.
Yeah.
I don't need that. I need accountability. I need to say, you know what? As a leader, as a guy that got paid $90 million, as a guy that's looked at as being a foundational piece, I need you to say, you know what? You're right. It's on me. I have to be better. I'm going to work at it, and we're going to work at it as a team. And I don't think that's where his head is. I don't think his head is like, oh, well, I need to get better at the defensive end this summer. It's like, well, let me get more buckets. And I just don't fit for what they're trying to do, in my opinion.
The team lacks leadership. I mean, De'Aaron says all of the right things to be a leader. Like, I can think back to a press conference. It was during a restart. It was after a loss. I think it was Dallas where – you know, the Kings really did play well in the Dallas game until the final few minutes. And then we just saw a gross amount of ISO ball. And, you know, when De'Aaron was asked about it post game, he was like, yeah, I've got to make smarter decisions. We've got to move the ball around. And I think it was actually Jason Jones that asked the question. Nobody was talking about De'Aaron. Like, right. Kip Bazemore was going ISO. Buddy Hield was going ISO. You know, everybody, you know, it was like one-touch possession, right? One guy, the guy who got the inbound ball, he was the guy who wound up taking the shot. De'Aaron maybe had one or two, you know, probably over an eight-minute stretch in that. The focus wasn't on De'Aaron, but De'Aaron put the focus on him. But I don't know that De'Aaron is the guy to... You know, I know, way back, way, way, way back, I'm old enough to remember when Trevor Ariza was a Sacramento King. He grabbed, you know, that there was a video that I think came out of training camp or it came out of practice, and he was trying to rally like, yo, like, what are you guys doing? Like, you guys are taking this practice, you know, lazy. We saw, going back again in the Pelicans game, we saw how vocal guys like Kemp Bazemore were on the defensive end of the ball. And we saw guys communicating defensively. The Dallas game, again, comes to mind where Buddy comes off the bench. Buddy comes in really late in that game. His first play, and I know it feels like we're picking on Buddy Hield. His first play, he blows the defensive assignment. Kristaps Porzingis gets a dunk. Luke Walton immediately calls timeout. And I think it was Bazemore that grabbed him and said, hey, you were in the wrong spot. And you know,
Corey Joseph.
Right. You saw that accountability. And I don't think that's something that was there for the Kings all year long.
No, and it's you're 100% right, Damian. And this is why you got to move on from Buddy if you can, because it starts with your best players. It starts with your best players. It's good that you got a Bazemore and a Corey Joseph and even a Harrison to a certain degree, holding the team accountable. But you need a Fox. You need a Marvin Bagley when he comes back. You need a Buddy Hield. You need a Bogdan Bogdanovic to see a situation like that, the lack of defense, the lack of any kind of resistance whatsoever on the perimeter, and say, you know what, we have to be better. And you know what, it starts with me. It starts with me. I have to be better. Not nobody else is playing defense. I just can't get over that quote. That was too much for me. And Buddy could go on and be, like I said, because he's able to do some really good things on the basketball floor, they can go somewhere else and do great things. But for this particular situation, what this team needs, what this franchise needs, I don't think he's it right now.
That's Kenny Caraway. I'm Damian Barling. This is D'Lo and KC here on ESPN 1320. We appreciate you so much for tuning in. You want to connect with the show, use our social media platforms at D'Lo and KC and at ESPN 1320. It's the same handle for both Twitter and on Instagram. KC.
Damian, somebody mentioned on the Twitter that I didn't mention North Highlands. I got love for North Highlands. Shout out to Highlands. All right?
You rolled off a lot of those right off the top of your head, man. That's a good look. The point you were driving home, man, is that Live and Local is back here on ESPN 1320, man. And it's been an amazing last, you know, week and some change since we first announced the show and we saw the response from people. Obviously, we've been living in the digital forum for a long time, and, you know, we're going to continue to live there. We've got the Be Heard platform. We got J Street Vibes. We've got all of these different things going on, but it was cool to watch people excited to have, you know, live and local radio content back here on ESPN 30. And as I mentioned that, I want to make sure I thank, Whitey Gleason, who still is all over this radio station because of his work with the game, and Mark Kreidler as well. Those guys are two class acts who sent us both messages wishing us good luck today. So we appreciate all of the messages on social media, man. I promise we do not take any of those retweets, likes, any of those replies, whatever it may be. We don't take any of those lightly, man. We are so thankful to be here with you. We are so thankful to be here on ESPN 1320. Are you a big believer in the New Orleans Pelicans and in Zion Williamson?
There's a train of thought out there that where Zion likes to get his buckets. Individually, they got players. Let me just say that, right? Zion and Brandon Ingram, great players. But the way they operate.
Whoa. You're not a fan of Lonzo?
More than other people, I'll tell you that.
Okay, no, I like Lonzo Ball. Like, I respect Lonzo Ball's game, and I think he has a really unique skill set in terms of the way he sees the floor. And I think the way that he sees the floor is, it's elite. You know, I don't know that he... I know a lot of other aspects of his game are lacking, but in terms of, you know, his court vision and him being able to pass guys open, like, I'm a big believer in Lonzo Ball.
No, 100%. I don't want to say I got in trouble, but I have people looking at me crazy, looking at me like the Yvette and Baby Boy when Rodney came back. They were looking at me with a side eye when I said I would be down for some type of Buddy Hield for Lonzo trade that brings Lonzo here, because I feel that's kind of the player. I would like my guy to score a little bit more than Lonzo, but that's the type of player that I would want to put next to De'Aaron Fox, a long, rangy, defensive-minded, playmaking type of guy to go next to De'Aaron Fox. And that's the guy that I would love. If you're selling low, because I'm hearing that New Orleans is selling low on Lonzo, come on to Sacramento.
That was slick. You just described Luka Doncic, but phrased it as Lonzo Ball. That's slick. I see what you did there. You ain't gonna pull the wool over my eyes, fam. I know what you did.
This is something I want to clarify as well. Maybe you can help me out with this, Damian. Okay. Now that Vlade is gone, does that mean that Luka comes to Sacramento? He's a king now? Is that how that works?
Oh, man, if that's the case.
That's how it would work. Like, if we got Vlade, that Luka would be here.
Oh, nobody thought that.
I just think we need to move on. I just think we need to move on.
We don't need to move on.
No, we need to move on.
If we want to sulk, fam, we can sulk.
We can sulk, but I'm just, what's it going to do? You know, Patino game, he ain't coming through that door. As much as we tweet, as much as we talk about it, he ain't coming through that door. He is buying in Dallas right now. He's not renting. He's buying. All right. Man. He's probably living next to Jerry Jones or something like that. He's buying. Okay. He ain't coming through that door. And we need to focus on what we need to do moving forward. That's just my
opinion. We could be focused on what we need to do moving forward and still be mad. We can still
move on, Damian.
We still mad about Dame Lillard. Did you see what Dame Lillard did this weekend? There's a picture. Every time Dame Lillard does that, it circulates all over the internet with Dame Lillard in the Sacramento Kings uniform when he came here for his workout. He's got the Sacramento Kings practice jersey on. And it's one of those like Ginsu knives that's super sharp that they use at like Benihana's, and it just slices your inside every time you see it. Every time you see him do what he did over these last, like what I will never in my life, because you know in this game where you talk about sports for a living and we've got to have takes and we've got to have opinions, and we're never going to shy away from, you know, sharing our opinion with you. We don't necessarily want you to agree with us. We just want you to listen and hear what we're saying. And every once in a while, we're going to throw out something that absolutely sucks. I thought...
Speak for yourself, Damian.
Bruh.
I'm always right.
You know... Hey, don't make me turn King's Twitter on you. Do not make me make King's Twitter start pulling up Kenny Caraway at IMKD receipts.
Leave my timeline alone, everybody. Please, leave it alone.
Every once in a while, we say something foolish, and I may have thought that Portland wasn't particularly interested in this restart. I may have thought with Dame Lillard, and you know, shame on me. Dame Lillard said, give us an opportunity. Like, if we're going to go to this bubble and we're going to play, quote, regular season game, like, give us an opportunity to get in. Like, give us a legitimate chance to play for something. And the NBA did, and Dame said all along, dude, if we're healthy – you're not going to beat us. Like, we're that good if we're healthy. We haven't been healthy all year. And lo and behold, they're healthy, and you look at what they did. So I couldn't possibly be more apologetic of Dame Lillard. I'll tell my namesake. I will never, ever, ever, ever doubt him again.
Oh, Damian, shout out to the king of pop, Michael Jackson. You are not alone, because I felt the same way. I thought Portland was just playing out the string, just like I thought with Phoenix. And I didn't believe in the Nurkic and, you know, and all this other, oh, yeah, they got him back. Now they can do work. I wasn't buying it, but he definitely put egg on my face, because Dame Dollar and even CJ, what CJ did in that playing game, oh, my gosh. Oh, my
broke
goodness.
My back. Spinal. And dude, Yusuf Nurkic, like, come on, man.
He's
like
balling.
That dude is playing like
balling. And shout out to him playing with a heavy heart, man. You know, that had to have been tough, man. So man, them boys is balling, but I actually think they ran out of gas.
Hey,
I think they ran
So you think they're you mean running out of gas headed into tomorrow's game?
Yeah.
Against the Lakers.
Think
like
they looked exhausted playing against Memphis, and I just don't know how much they got left.
Do you buy into the, oh, the Lakers, you know, they're doing that thing where you hit the switch, and, you know, LeBron, he constantly hits the switch when it comes to the playoffs. Or do you think the Lakers are kind of right for the picking right now for the Portland Trailblazers?
No, they got real issues. They got real issues in the backcourt. Who's guarding? Not only who's going to be able to guard Dame and CJ, but because, you know, whatever's going on with Avery Bradley not being there, Rondo, whenever he's going to come back, they're not even offensive juggernauts. But the fact that Dame and CJ don't have to expend a lot of energy playing defense allows them to save up everything that they need to for the offensive end. I think it gives Portland the opportunity to make this a series. The other thing about this is Carmelo Anthony, my guy.
Ooh.
Carmelo Anthony.
Ooh.
I'm not saying he's in his prime. I'm not saying that LeBron isn't an MVP candidate and Melo is or something like that, but I can guarantee you Melo is looking at this like, yeah, I'm playing against LeBron, the same guy I played at the ABCD camp, you know, 15, 16 years ago. This is LeBron. It's not LeBron James.
Intimidated by it.
So he's
yeah.
looking at it like LeBron he's looking at it like LeBron is my equal, not I'm LeBron's equal. He's looking like I'm a Carmelo Anthony. LeBron's on my level. You know what I'm saying? And he's going to be ready to go.
In theory, I'm with you on that. But I feel like there's a certain point in practice where that's going to come into play. And then they're going to be like, yeah, I'm LeBron's equal. And I love Carmelo Anthony. I'm a Carmelo Anthony fan. I can't believe that he didn't play You know, he was unsigned for an entire year. I'm happy that he's found, you know, a great role in Portland. But Kenny, let's not get carried away here. LeBron James is still the best player in the world.
He is. I'm just telling you what Melo's mindset is. And because of that, he ain't going back down.
That may very well be Melo's mindset, and he's absolutely not going to back down. But there comes a certain point after 25, 26, 27, 28 points where it's like, all right, maybe if we're Portland, we got to come up with a little switch here. We got to come up with a change. We got to figure out a different way. Because the number 60, that's the number you look out for. Uh-huh. 60 points. LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Mm-hmm. Those two get to 60. They're not losing. It's science.
I'll tell you this.
They do not lose when they get to 60.
I'll ask you this. If they get to 60, where are they getting the other 60 points from? That's why I think Portland has an issue or has an argument here. If Bubble Cools is balling, you know what I'm saying? If that boy Cools is balling, yeah, maybe he can give you 25. But Danny Green, Deion Waiters, KCP, Chris Cook, you know, Quinn Cook, I mean, you got to get 60 more points.
Okay, so I got a theory then. You went Carmelo. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go Dwight. What if Dwight Howard?
Dwight's been playing good in L.A. He's been playing good in L.A.
What if Dwight Howard, and he's not going to centralize Yusuf Nurkic, but you use your six fouls.
Yeah.
You know, you make him work. You tire him. Maybe Dwight Howard could be a big factor in the
JaVale
series.
Could
where
do
you,
that too.
You take him away. And you, can we go back to something that we just – insanely glossed over, and I feel like this is only something that happens in sports. CJ McCollum has a fracture in his back, and we just glossed over it like it was nothing. Like, CJ McCollum hit clutch baskets
that boy was
the other day in that play-in game with a fracture in his back. And we just kind of glossed over it like, yeah, CJ McCollum's got a fracture in his back. Oh, but look what he did. He's fine.
Right. No, that's a big issue. And that's why I'm not going as far as saying you know, the Lakers will, you know, lose to the Blazers or whatever. I don't feel like Portland plays any kind of defense, so that's going to be an issue. And I think at the end of the day, they'll have too much. But I see it being six or seven.
I can see it being six. I could definitely see it being six. Frank Vogel is more committed to the defensive end than Portland is, and I think that's where they could put in a lot of frustration for those big three that we just named. And really, if you want to throw in Carmelo Anthony and make it a big four, then I'm completely down for that. But I think Frank Vogel and his defensive schemes, as long as LeBron James buys into it, and we've seen stretches this year where he knows they buy into it. They buy into what Frank Vogel is selling them. We see it every year. Well, LeBron, they can't do it. This LeBron James, they're playing terrible. They can't just hit the switch. It's not real. And then suddenly the playoffs start. And boom, LeBron James is the greatest player who's ever lived again. At D'Lo and KC on Twitter and Instagram, you could connect with us there. We got plenty more to talk about. Devastating injuries to players across the NFL, including in San Francisco. We'll touch on that as D'Lo and KC continue here on ESPN 1320. Couple of notes here. You guys are absolutely crushing it on social media, man. Thank you so much for that. Follow us across all our platforms at D'Lo and KC. We just had a chance to take a glimpse at it in one. The amount of followers that have come in during the course of the show, we greatly appreciate it. Please, please continue to add that. That's going to be one of our biggest sources of interaction, not here just during the 2 hours of the show, but all throughout the day at D'Lo and KC on Twitter and Instagram. Same with at ESPN 1320. Kenny, Brian hit me up. It's D'Lo and KC. Yo, can the 209 get some love?
Always, man. Shout out to Stockton. Shout out to the Stockton Slap. Shout out to Nate Diaz. You know what I'm saying? All my people out in Stockton. Shout out to Stockton Kings. You know what I'm saying? Shout out to UOP, Delta College. Got love for all y'all out there, man.
There we go, man. And we're live, local, and we're all over the world on the radio.com app. So if you're running around doing errands, you don't want to miss a single minute of the show, no worries. Download the radio.com app. It's completely free. Search ESPN 1320, hit the heart button, and boom, not only can you get us live, but you can get us on demand in the podcast feature as well. We've got you covered 24/7, and we appreciate you for tuning in. We're going to shift gears here a little bit. We'll get back to basketball at about 1:20 or so when we debut a new segment. Of course, this is the first episode, so every segment we debut is new. But let's go to football a little bit, and I want to get into the San Francisco 49ers. Let everybody know we are the home of the San Francisco 49ers, and you, Kenny Caraway, are a big 49ers fan. That's right. I want to start in Washington. And in a weird turn of events, this isn't starting with a disastrous story. Hmm. The Washington football team has hired Jason Wright as their team president. And in 2020, Jason Wright is the first black team president in NFL history. He's only the fourth former player to ascend to that role. So on multiple fronts, this is a major hiring for that disastrous organization in Washington.
100%, man. Got to give them a round of applause, even if it is trying to, you know, build some goodwill and good PR and things of that nature. Hey, we still got up in there. So shout out to the Washington football team for making that hire.
I want to applaud them for hiring a candidate who is qualified.
Yes.
I want to applaud them for hiring a candidate who's got a resume to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not going to pass Dan Snyder off as if he's suddenly some woke NFL owner.
No.
Like, they don't get that. They hired a qualified candidate who was black. Like, Jason Wright's qualifications are there for him, and I don't think Dan Snyder deserves. But I guess in the end, as we said, it's 2020. Someone's got to be the first. And I mean, it's sad that it's 2020 and he's the first. But in the sense, I guess you got to give the devil his due in this sense. And Washington is always going to be the devil in this conversation.
Let's be perfectly clear, Damian. Dan Snyder never gets a G pass. He just doesn't.
Okay, thank you.
Just what it is.
Okay. Very good. Very good. Let me give you a quote here from Jason Wright. It's a huge moment to bring those two worlds together. What other job would they come together at such a unique time for an organization at the point our team is? I'm just happy I landed in this role at this time. There are other reasons. It's historic, but that's a byproduct of me being the right and qualified candidate at this time. All of that is just icing on the cake. Again, get to know this man's name. He is Jason Wright, and he is taxed with fixing this disastrous organization that is Washington. And with the qualifications that Jason Wright has, and I'm actually a bit of a Ron Rivera fan.
Yeah,
maybe.
We're both Ron.
Maybe these are the right two guys who could, you know, pull this team out of the mouth of hell that Dan Snyder constantly has it in and bring it back to some level of respectability.
Well, you see, I mean, with Ron Rivera, with Jason Wright coming in, with them changing the name of the team, you see, they're trying to change the culture here and trying to change everything that's going on. There's just one still stinky sock that's in that laundry that they can't get rid of. You know what I'm saying? And until that happens, the stench won't completely be off. But you know what? You know, hey, you got to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere. And like I said, Ron Rivera coming in there, now the hire Jason Wright, changing the name in general. They're trying. I'll give them brownie points for that. They're trying.
Boy, we have really started grading on a curve when we talk about professional organizations just trying not to be grossly offensive. But I guess, hey, 2020 in a nutshell. And the stinky sock I believe you were referring to is Dan Snyder. We'll have more on that and more on him and a potential uprising from other owners within the Washington group. One of them happens to be the CEO of FedEx, who really put into motion the changing of the Washington football team name. Let's get here more locally as some frustrating news as padded practice. It's really easy, Kenny, to forget that training camp is happening.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to, you know, things being a certain way. We're so used to getting film out of practice every day. We're so used to seeing, you know, coaches surrounded by reporters and all of these different things. And that's just not the way of the world right now. That's not the way of NFL training camp in 2020. So we're relying a lot on social media to give us information. And, you know, the first padded practice took place yesterday, at least for the San Francisco 49ers, as they kind of went through that ramp-up period where they were just doing strength and conditioning and different things like that. And normally it's not uncommon for bad news to come out of the first day of padded practices. And yesterday was no exception. Jalen Hurd, he missed his entire rookie season with a back injury. It appears he's going to miss his entire sophomore season with an ACL injury.
Very sad to hear for that young man. I feel for him. He just can't seem to stay healthy, you know, and we see this in all walks of sports and all, you know, in different leagues. It's nobody's fault. You know what I'm saying? It's just the bad breaks, no pun intended, or whatever the case may be. And I saw a stat about him that said in the last 5 years of football that he has played between University of Tennessee, Baylor, and now the 49ers, 5 years, he's only been able to play in 19 games in those five years. And that's tough, man. That's really tough. So
it's tough, but it also, you know, I hate that he's not going to be a part of the season this year, but it's tough, but it shows you how, one, talented he is, and it shows you, two, how determined he is. Yeah. The fact that, like, whether it was injuries, transfers, whatever the case may be, he kept finding his way onto the roster here. You know, he's found his way on, you know, to the San Francisco 49ers. I thought he was going to be a key piece of what they were going to do offensively, and obviously, you know, his ACL had other eyes. So you're a 49er fan. What?
That's right, Niner gang, man. You know what time it is. Who got a problem with that? Hit me on Twitter. Who got a problem with that? Niner gang out here, man. What's up?
Nobody got a problem with you being a 49er.
I'm checking.
You try to step to – I think what you're trying to do is you're trying to subtly call out Las Vegas Raider fans. That's what I feel like you're trying to do, because you know how split the fan base is here in the Sacramento area.
You know, Las Vegas Raiders, Dallas Cowboys, Green Bay Packers. Yo. Seattle Seahawks, all y'all can get it. It don't matter. We're going back to the ball. It's nothing.
Do we need to create a jar, like a virtual jar, that we put a dollar in every time we refer to the Las Vegas Raiders as something other than the Las Vegas Raiders?
It won't be hard for me, though, because they're not Oakland no more. I'm mad about them leaving Oakland, too, by the way. I'm bitter about that. So, yeah, they ain't Oakland. The Raiders.
You know what was funny for me during that whole process is I was mad too. Like and not being a fan of the Raiders, you know, I respect the organization, but I was mad for fans. And then I realized, wait a minute, like, fans aren't mad. Well, if Raider fans aren't mad, what am I mad for? They're like, yo, it's silver and black. Right. Whether it's Oakland, whether it's Los Angeles, whether it's Las Vegas, if you want to ship them to Alaska or Switzerland or Paris, whatever it is, we're silver and black. And man, that fan base rides those colors. Now, I don't mean like this was 100% of the, you know, the fan base population, but a lot of people that I interacted with are huge Raider fans, and they were like, yeah, whatever, we'll just go to Vegas for the game. It's all good. It's all love. It's no big deal.
Now, on the flip side, I think the idea of Vegas is phenomenal. That stadium, off day one, off the rip, probably going to be the best stadium in the league. And just the thought of, you know, say my Niners, you know, having a game at Raiders. You know, I circle that on the calendar. We going to Vegas. We champagneing and campaigning all weekend. Then on Sunday afternoon, we get to the stadium. You know, we take over that stadium. We win the game because we always beat the Raiders. You know what I'm saying? So I think the idea of Vegas football, I love it. I love it. Let's go.
I think that's what they were banking on. I think that's what Jerry Jones was banking on when he pushed this move to happen. I think that's what the entire NFL was banking on when they pushed this move to happen, was for people to think exactly like you did. Yo, let's go to Las Vegas for the week and hang out. And as you said, champagne in campaign. I'm curious, though, what are you campaigning for? Like, as you're doing the champagne, say you're champagning and campaigning, what are you campaigning towards?
Oh, we're just talking to whoever I'm there with. We're just talking and campaigning, just talking amongst each other.
So you go there with a small circle, and as the champagne starts to flow, the circle gets bigger.
I mean, it depends. Sometimes, you know, when I'm in the booth, I may only want to keep it a small circle.
Excuse me. Well, excuse me, brother, with the KC booth. I'm not a Vegas guy, bro. Like that,
I love Vegas.
I don't like gambling simply because I don't like losing. And people
that's
say
a good reason not to like gambling.
yo, it's what is greater, the thrill of victory or the agony of defeat? Well, I'm going to tell you, is the agony of defeat. Like, I do not want to throw my money away. I'm good on that. You're listening to D-Lo and KC on KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento, a radio.com sports station, and driven by Lashers Elk Grove Dodge. Who is the wide receiver? Who is the primary target for the San Francisco 49ers at the wide receiver position now?
Obviously, when Debo is there, he's number one. But you know, he's going to be out for a couple weeks into the season. I know people are talking about him possibly being back week one and things like that. I'd be super cautious with Debo Samuels. You don't want to rush him out there at all. So then you look down the list and you got a Kendrick Bourne, super underrated. I like Kendrick. I really do. That rookie Brandon Ayuk, he's having a great start to training camp, and he's looking every bit of the part of a big-time wide receiver, according to all reports of the people who've seen him to start training camp. But then you got question marks, right? Then you got Dante Pettis. They said he's looked good according to some people, but you can't really rely on him. Then you got the same with Trent Taylor. You know, he's the same issue where he's coming off injuries. You can't rely on him too much. Richie James Jr., he might be an option, but he's also coming off a broken wrist. We don't know when he's going to get back. Then you got a seventh-round guy like Juwan Jennings, who is turning some heads, but you just don't know. He's a